Hi, Filmatics. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Today, we have an amazing guest, Daniel Tibbetts. He is the Chief Operating Officer of Odyssey Impact and Transform Films. He also is the head of content for esports lifestyle brand called SubNation. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah. So Daniel, want to let the audience know, because we have audience all around the world, India, Australia, Japan, Italy, Hawaii, USA, Australia. Where are you recording live with me today from?
I'm recording live from Los Angeles, California.
Oh, great. You're local like me. Great, great, great. We have beautiful weather today. And speaking of, when you were a kid, did you have a favorite childhood film that was one of your favorites?
Well, I had a great experience. I remember kind of my first real movie, theatrical, big experience was actually Star Wars. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and a family friend who I'm still actually very close with today took my brother and I to see Star Wars. And I had never seen anything like that on the big screen. And I remember afterwards driving home, literally in his car, where we're all pretending we're in a TIE fighter, right? Driving home. And it really probably that was the moment where I found my love for movies, my love for storytelling. And it's such a classic story, right? At the end of the day, as we all know, it's a Western. And that led to me really just embracing film and television as a passion.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you were little, did you have brothers and sisters? Did you guys play Star Wars when you went home in the backyard?
We did. The other one that I was also a big fan of was when Star Trek. So the original series, I was a big fan. And I remember being, 5 years old and playing. I was always McCoy. I was always Dr. McCoy when I was playing Star Trek as a kid. And then, the Star Trek movie, which really wasn't right for me at that age, but the second one, Wrath of Khan, that's a great movie. Still to this day, it's a great movie. So I'm a big Star Trek fan and a Star Wars fan.
Oh, well, we just had Jeff Nimoy on the show. I don't know if you know him, but his cousin.
Well, it's pretty exciting, I have to say.
Yeah, his cousin was Spock.
Wish I was on with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. His cousin was Spock. So, yeah, So that's wonderful. And so I want to ask you, you are this amazing executive producer of these wonderful shows. So was there perhaps a film, a Criterion film, that inspired your career path?
There actually is. There was a, if you're familiar with the film City Slickers, right? And you probably say, wow, how did City Slickers kind of define your life and your career? Well, it actually was one thing in the film. And if you remember, Billy Crystal, he's 38, 39 years old. He's trying to figure out, what the meaning of life is. And he's out there one day riding with Jack Palance. And, Jack Palance calls it out, you city slickers, you come up here and you got yourselves all up in knots and you come up here and think you're going to find it out. And Billy Crystal looks at him and says, well, what is the secret, basically? And Jack Palance puts up his finger and he's just holding up his finger. And Billy Crystal does the joke, your finger, and he's like, no, it's one thing. Right. And that's the importance of that movie. And I was in my, early 20s, maybe 20. When I saw that film for the first time. And I think it's really profound, and it's been a driving force. It's about knowing who you are. It's about knowing what you want. And what is that one thing, right? And if you know what that one thing is that you are passionate about, that you believe in, that you're going to go for, then every other decision is easy, right? Because it has to lead to that one thing. And so that was the moment. And then shortly after that, really defining and saying, what was my one thing? What was I passionate about? What did I wanted to do in my life? And I wanted to be a producer. And I had no idea, zero idea how to do that. I didn't go to school for it. I really didn't understand it. I couldn't tell you what a producer was. But at that moment, I said, that's the one thing. I'm going to be a producer. And all these years later, I did it.
Well, we're going to have to ask you how you did that, because everyone's going to ask him. So, but before we get that, I want to ask you, do you have a favorite director? And if you can share one of your favorite film shots from a movie, because that's one of my favorite things on the show to ask people.
Oh gosh, I would say I don't have a favorite director, but I have favorite directors for specific types of films. So for example, over the last 5 years, I've been really fortunate to work with Robert Rodriguez, just brilliant film director, wonderful creative. I have, you know, it's a great example of you're never too old to learn. I have learned so much from Robert and his creative practices. And he's even his business sense, right? He really understands how to put things together. He's a wonderful producer. He's a wonderful director. He's a wonderful writer. And, you know, so El Mariachi, you know, was an inspiring film for me. When I saw El Mariachi for the first time, first off, I wasn't watching a lot of foreign language films, right? And so the fact that somebody had recommended a Spanish language film back then, I was like, okay. But it was just so beautifully done. And the fact that it was $7,000, you know, so that film had a really huge impact on me. Obviously I mentioned Star Wars or Star Trek, those did City Slickers, but also, you know, another film that I really enjoyed was like Rob Reiner doing Harry Met Sally. That was a very impactful film because it looks at the journey of lives, right? It looks at this couple, this friendship from when they're young to they get older, but it also has those elements of the older couples talking about how they met. And it's really retrospective of somebody's life, which as a young person gave me a lot of insight to how I should see the future. You know, so those moments are, you know, were pretty important to me. The real Rob Reiner film that I also loved was Princess Bride. And one of the reasons you talk about scenes, there's such a great classic scene in it that I constantly bring up as a producer, right? Where they're sitting on the wall, they have to invade the castle. You know, you have Wesley who's injured, and he asks, what are our assets? Right. And it's a wheelbarrow. It's this and that. You know, what are our liabilities? Right. 60 men in front of the gate. And the reason why that's such an important moment is because that's how I look at producing everything. It's like, OK, we're going to make something. Let's put it on the table. What are our assets? OK, great. We have these items. Right. Great. That's how we're going to make our film, right? We're going to work with what we have, and we have to go make it, and we have to figure it out. And it connects back to what I was saying about Robert Rodriguez when he did El Mariachi. He had $7,000. He had a location in Mexico because of his buddy, and he had his buddies, right? That's it. And so he had to just figure out what to make, and he made something based on the assets he had. So that's the way I look at producing everything. It's not about, for me, and this is Robert's quote, the I need list. Oh, I need all these things to go make a film. I need all this money. I need. It's not about that. What do you have? And then just go do it. Just do it.
I love that. That is great advice and great films. I mean, oh my gosh, when Harry Met Sally, the part when she's like, oh, yes. I mean, the famous scene, beautiful. And great advice with to pick the one thing. Thank you for sharing that because so many people are listening. They're hopeful or they're on their path to become an actor, writer, director, producer, or filmmaker. And lots of people from around the world just don't know how to start. So, you know, and I think sharing.
Yeah. And the answer is just start. And especially today, because you have the, you know, most people, I think at this point, if you have a cell phone in your pocket, you have a camera, right? Going back to Robert Rodriguez, he had to do a film camera, right? That was back when the film camera, and he didn't know, you know, he wasn't developing every day, so he had no idea what he had on that film. And he didn't, you know, he didn't have audio sync, right? He had to get the audio done after he shot a scene. Like, you know, to me, there's no excuse today for being able to take your cell phone and go tell a great story.
Yeah, and that's great advice too. And during the pandemic, talk about like you're with your assets. You have my dog just came up. She's a husky, so she's a ham. Oh. She wanted some attention. So yeah, so I think a lot of us have been doing podcasts because we, you know, like I've been looking at Daniel's mic. Everyone, I'm so jealous. I'm just so jealous. He's like got this beautiful mic. Are we allowed to even say what kind of mic it is?
You know, I'm not sure which one it is. I did look for a bit, and I like it because it makes me feel like a radio host.
Yeah,
you know, I'll be on a meeting. I'll just, you know, do some radio voice thing for a second. I don't know.
I'm going to
ask you. Maybe it's a secret passion of mine.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to send me like what brand it is because it's so nice.
I will.
I'm like, you know. So I'm going to ask you, so where did you grow up and you said you didn't go to school, but where did you go to school and where did you grow up and how did you start your career path?
Yeah, I did. I grew up pretty much in Mesa, Arizona, right? The suburbs of Phoenix. And ended up my college career was actually at Arizona State. And what I was saying earlier is I didn't go to school for media. I didn't go to school to be a producer. I went because it was what I thought I should do. And my goal was to get which I did. I got a business degree in marketing, honestly, because I figured no matter what I do with my life, it would be valuable. It was kind of the quickest path to get that degree. So I did it. And how I started was actually, it was a year after I graduated from college. I had no career path. I had no kind of, that one thing hadn't hit me yet. Wasn't sure what I was going to do with my life. And I went to go visit a friend of mine who worked at the PBS affiliate at ASU, Arizona State University. And he showed me around and there was this room with all these monitors and all these chairs. And I got to go on the stage and I got to see the cameras and I got to see the lights. And when I was in that editing room with all the chairs and all the monitors, I said, what is that? Who sits there? You know, this kind of main chair, you could tell everybody was waiting for this one person to speak, right? And everybody else was on their buttons and doing their things. And he said, that's the producer. And as I walked to my car to go to a telemarketing job, and all of a sudden, all the films, all the TV, all the years, all the things I had done in my life came together in a single flash of light. That one thing was clear as day. I mean, I could just see a future as a producer. And I went in, within 30 minutes, I was in front of my boss at the telemarketing place, and I quit. And he looked at me, and he and I had a really good relationship. And he said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to be a producer. And I just remember him leaning back in his chair. You could just see it on his face. He thought I was insane. And he said, good luck with that. and so then you go, okay, well, then how did you get into it? First thing I did is I went back to Arizona State and I enrolled in a master's program in communication. But I never finished it because the very first summer I got an internship at a local television station, KPNX, in the promo department. And while I was working there, I met just a wonderful director named Joe Rasulo, who I'm still very, very close with. He's a close family friend. But back then, he was this larger-than-life guy from LA, director, writer, producer. He came in there to do some things and he was saying, we need this, we need that. And he looked over at me and he needed a PA at that moment to do something for him. And he's just like, you're with me, let's go. And I followed him around for the entire summer. And then he and another producer that we were working with, Rob Dalton, started hiring me to write and produce different things for them. And it just started to steamroll into one project and another project. And then one of them moved to LA and asked me to move to LA and work at another project, a BBC miniseries. And so I was very fortunate. I think it's a common theme you hear, which is people get started because someone else, you know, needed something or reached out or became a mentor. And I was very lucky to have two mentors who were doing a lot of work that had me be a part of the process. And so I'm really fortunate to both Joe and to Rob Dalton, who gave me that start. And it's one of the things that I've tried to do in my career is knowing that I wouldn't be here without them and so many other people. You know, I am always looking for great talent, you know, out there and say, hey, let's go do this. Let's go do that. You know, here's an opportunity and run with it. You know, it's all about, you know, paying it forward and trying to have a legacy of, you know, bringing up the next wonderful creators.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you did this internship, which a lot of people do to meet people and or get school credit. And so you actually met your mentors, but they gave you the chance, but you also had the skills to back it up. So, which leads me to, can you share with, like maybe your first project that you did? You have, like, you have so many things on in there. So I would love for you to highlight any of your favorites that you worked on.
Well, the first was back at KPNX. It was a few PSAs working with Joe. And then the second project actually was kind of the big jumping off part. It was a syndicated one-time special called Streetwise. And it ended up winning a couple Emmys, local Emmys, Rocky Mountain Emmys, which are Emmys. And suddenly people just identified me as, oh, we need Daniel. He's a writer and producer. So look, I didn't have a lot of experience. I wasn't doing it for very long, but I threw myself into it and literally attached myself to anybody I could. For example, when I was the intern at KPNX, not only was I helping Joe with the PSAs, but at night, whenever I could, I would go find the camera people working and I'd ask them if I could hold their light, right? Or I'd go find one of the producers and say, can I go make copies for you? And so what I did is I was one, I think anybody out there, if you're young and in school, make sure you're maximizing internships. They are the most important way to jump into any career. Two, if that door opens for you and you can dedicate the time, dedicate as much time as you can. Be there early, stay there late. And again, I had a job, everybody has to have a job, right, to pay the bills. But every moment I could, I was dedicated to helping anybody who needed help. And the truth is, in entertainment, everybody needs help. Right? You're always short on budget. There's always tight schedules. Everybody's racing. And so if you can be a lending hand, they will take it, you know, and they will use you. And so, while we were pre-production, I was with Joe. While we're shooting, I was with Joe, right? While we're in post, right, we were together. And so I just learned and soaked up everything I can so that all of a sudden, the next job that came along, somebody else was on that job and they go, well, who is that? Who is that guy running around? Oh, Daniel. Yeah, we should just hire Daniel, right? And that became the thing. Oh, let's find Daniel. He knows how to do this. And I would do it and I'd figure it out.
I love that. So you were the go-to. So can you tell me, like, you have some amazing films that you were part of. You got the Emmy on your first project, and you also are known for Hood River, Machinimas, Chasing the Cub, The Street Fighter, yeah. Resurrection. Do you want to, maybe pick how you came about to those films?
So the big shift I made out of non-scripted was to get into scripted. And I worked with two amazing, amazing producer, writer, showrunners, Bob Papazian and Jim Hirsch. And they hired me to be their development executive. And we did a couple TV movies for Lifetime and some other networks, A Mother's Testimony and Face Value, and a couple of those were TV movies. But the big project we did together was the HBO series Rome. So that was probably the biggest scripted project I was ever involved in. At the time, it was the most expensive series in television history. If you remember the HBO series that launched in Rome, this was a while ago, 2005, it really redefined television, scripted television series, and led to some of the bigger series that came after, like Deadwood, and even Game of Thrones, right? Game of Thrones is kind of predecessor was the series Rome. So really proud of that one. And that I originally worked on with William J. McDonald, who is the executive producer and co-creator. And together he and I went and got John Milius involved. So I got to work with the great John Milius. And then the showrunner was Bruno Heller. And so as a young producer development executive, I got to work with some of the top people in the industry very early. Some of the ones you've mentioned is after Rome, I went back to non-scripted, ended up at Fox, and created one of the first original scripted series for mobile, right? So before we had feature phones, iPhones and Android devices, the smartphone, there were feature phones. And, you know, they were the flip phones, they were the razors, and they didn't have video players on them.
The flip phones, yeah.
Yeah, the flip phones. They were the early phones. I created something called the Mobisode, Worked with Mitch Feynman and Lucy Hood. We sold it to Verizon, and that became the first original series to launch on a cell phone in the US back in 2005. And so that was my jump into a whole new arena of what I'll call digital, right, and mobile first. So branching from television to this new medium. And then same story, I remember talking to my boss at Fox and saying, you know, I'm going to go make television for cell phones. Now, this is 2005. So he sat back and he kind of looked at me and he goes, okay, you know, that wasn't a thing yet, right? We weren't talking about that. But we ended up creating actually original shows for all the carriers back then, all the different phones, all the different devices. We were early developers on iPhone and Android devices. And that's just some backstory because that's what led me to Machinima, which was a lifestyle gaming company that primarily had its channel on YouTube. And when I joined, we really focused on going from, you know, gameplay YouTube content to some really interesting IP, like the Transformers, like Street Fighter, and being able to, for me, work with those brands, find a way to tell those stories on a digital first platform like YouTube. That was kind of the unique perspective, right? Because it's very different than television, very different than certainly what we did with Rome. Here, you know, certainly at that time, we were talking about shorter form. We were talking about, you know, the budgets were much smaller. You didn't have the originals that you now see with Netflix and Amazon and everything else. So we were kind of the pioneers, right? Creating some of that original scripted and non-scripted content for digital first platforms, whether it was mobile or dot-coms, let's say.
Yeah. Funny tidbit, because I was like, I wonder if that's Machinima from YouTube, because I'm actually a partner with Machinima. So you're speaking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had all these like quirky, funny spoofs, like Independent Jones, James Blond. I just did all these funny little skits on YouTube. But
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And you know, I was born in Italy. So when you're talking about Rome, I saw that. Now, is my memory correct when it was like a lot of English actors, right?
Yes.
Right? And
yes.
I'm like, what's up with the English actors playing these? What, like, that was the one thing when I was watching it. I'm like, can they pick American actors or it's Italian actors? They're all English. But that was that like a thing or what was that about?
Well, it's funny. It is kind of a thing. So the original, like, if you go back to the meeting with Bill McDonald and I, where this whole thing was pretty much dreamt up, was the pitch was I, Claudius meets Gladiator, right? the film Gladiator hadn't come out yet when we first developed this, but Bill knew about the film and he was telling me about it. And, you know, I was a fan of I, Claudius, right? Again, strange thing for a kid to be a fan of, but when that came out, right, I was really young. But so I, Claudius meets Gladiator was the idea. And if you remember, I, Claudius did have the English accent.
Okay.
But what I would say is, I think there's something interesting about, and yes, obviously, in the Roman period, they didn't have English accents, but it seems like something people are willing to accept, maybe more than let's call it an American accent, right? It's just kind of, there's something creatively that I think people will, you know, the suspension of disbelief can be there probably more if they have an English accent than if they didn't.
Yeah.
I know that sounds crazy, but it seems to work.
Yeah. And now the Pope has, Jude Law. You're like, again, with the English guy.
Yeah.
Playing the Italian. I like, but, you know, HBO has some incredible shows. So what, because you've done like TV, a lot of executive producing of TV shows in the scripted world. How hard is that process to get a TV show on there? Obviously with you, it's like, it's easy, but.
No. I'll tell you, it's, I've been very fortunate. I think, you know, one of the key elements is, you know, it does come down to a great story. Yes. Right. You have to have a great story. I would say today, like if I looked at Rome today, I couldn't sell that the way we did then. We really sold it off of a pitch. We sold it off of the fact that, you know, we had Jim Hirsch and Bob Papazian. We had William J. McDonald. We didn't have Bill Milius when we originally pitched it, but definitely getting a John Milius, getting a John Milius you know, that's all the right elements to get something to move forward. So I think that's the key is, you know, and again, to people out there, because I know a lot of people have amazing scripts, right? And amazing stories. And they're asking, well, how do I get this made? You know, yes, somebody could read that script and go, I'm going to make this. That does happen. The odds are greater to get it done if you package it. Is there a star? Is there, especially in the series business, a showrunner, right? Or with the films, is it a director? So you mentioned Hood River, which is a feature doc that I executive produced in the last year, a year and a half. And, you know, so two elements there. One is Robert Rodriguez, right? And the other is Stephen Cantor. And Stephen Cantor was the director. Robert was the executive producer, but Stephen Cantor was the director. And Stephen has great credentials as a feature doc director for this type of very impactful film. So I think bringing certain elements together, that's helpful if somebody's looking to finance it, because the financier is looking at the end of the day either to just tell a great story, right? But they also have to get a return on their investment, whatever that cost is. You know, how are they then marketing it? How are they selling it? How are they putting it out into the world to get people to watch it, so that at the end of the day they make their money back and then can do the next one? You know, so that's at the end of the day, it's still a business. And the question is, how do you take your great creative vision and turn it into something that can return the investment that was put into it?
Yeah. And so that's amazing advice. So I want to do two parts with you because you have so much stuff that we haven't even talked about. But we can briefly, would you like to talk about your nonprofit from the Stairs Media Company, because you are the chief operating officer at Odyssey Impact. Could you share a little bit about that with us?
Yeah, just to clarify how that all works. So, I was president of El Rey for a number of years, and I really loved working with Robert. But what I also loved is Robert's vision to create a platform for English language U.S. Hispanic voices, right, in front of the camera and behind the camera. And, you know, when people talk about media for the Hispanic population in the United States, they talk about Telemundo and they talk about Univision, right? Which are primarily Spanish language networks. But one of the things that he saw, which I now see very clearly missing in the marketplace, is the second, third, fourth, fifth generation of Latinos that are looking to be positively represented in media. Right. And so that's what El Rey was about. And what I loved about that is we were telling great stories, but we were doing it with mission. And Robert loves to say, you know, it's about escapist entertainment, but followed by mission. Right. The mission is always there. So Odyssey Impact is a company that I've known for 10 years. And what they do is they drive social change through storytelling. Right. So Odyssey is the nonprofit. They are the 501c3, and they create impact material about how to change, you know, racial and social injustices in society. Transform Films is the company that makes the films. So Transform, which is owned by Odyssey, will make a film. So, for example, one of the films we have out right now, Stranger Sister, is a documentary that shows two women, one Muslim, one Jewish, who joined together to stop hate in their communities.
I love it. Daniel, let's stop here so we can tell the audience these films, because I think they're going to love these projects and want to learn more and hear about it, because we have, you know, a great, you know, we're big in Brazil and Mexico, and I'm sure a lot of filmmakers are interested in finding out more information. So we're going to end part one here. Daniel, can you come back for part two?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So please, everyone, join us for part two. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for tuning in, and come back for part two with Daniel Tibbetts, who's going to tell you about his Impact Odyssey and more films, film talk. Be right back.